Hey everyone, before we begin this episode of Still Loading, I just wanted to talk about the passing of Kazuhisa Hashimoto. For those who don't know, Hashimoto was the creator of the iconic and ubiquitous Konami Code. The code has been used on video games and websites, referenced in movies, television and music, and even used in a Fisher-Price toy. Hashimoto started at Konami in 1981 and created the code while working on a port of Gradius for the NES. While the code is most famous for being associated with the Contra series, specifically the original Contra, Hashimoto created it for Gradius for playtesting. The code was added because even him and the developers were not able to beat it. He was quoted as saying that he hadn't played that much and obviously couldn't beat it. Up, up, down, down, left, right, BA start. Rest in peace, Mr. Hashimoto. On this episode of Still Loading, it's Mario Month 2020. Hello everyone, welcome to this new episode of Still Loading. We are kicking off Mario Month with this episode, and I am beyond excited because this year we're going back to some more classic Mario games. Last year, we focused a lot on the edutainment side of things, and this year we are going in to the handheld legacy of Mario. We'll get to the 3D stuff soon. I know I've been kind of, haven't done 64 yet, haven't done Sunshine, haven't done any of the Galaxy games. We're getting to them. That's going to be another year. But this year we are talking about Mario handhelds and a couple of the offshoots of it. So as usual though, oh yeah, I forgot to say, I am your host of Still Loading, Josh, and with me, as per usual, my friend Casey has joined me for Mario Month. Casey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me. I love coming on and doing this.
Thank you. I mean, it's one of my favorite times. It's that time of year when the world gets Mario again.
Yes.
It's that time of year. So last year we have historically done Mario Month in the month of July. Mm-hmm. And the only reason that ever existed was because back when I was doing the 40 for 40 series on the podcast, the Mario games that I had complete in box just happened to fall in line with the month of July for when they were being released. So I figured I would do, you know, Super Mario Bros. 1, 2, 3, and World. The World was a little disjointed, not of anyone's fault, but it was just like it was the first time having like five people on the show, and I also only had one mic at the time, so we were all huddled around in your room.
So this is your third year doing this, right?
This is the third year
that's
of Mario
so cool.
Month.
Yeah.
Now, we are moving up Mario Month to March this year for two reasons. One, I have a big summer project, which will be announced at the end of Mario Month. Everyone's going to know what it is at the end of Mario Month. And two, Mario Day is March 10th, which, well, at least that's how Nintendo observes it. For those who don't know why, if you look at March, M-A-R, 10, looks like an I-O, Mario, it's a stretch, but it works.
Do you know what day that falls on this year?
I actually do not know what day that falls on this year.
Might have to make that a day to just play all the old Mario games. Please be Saturday.
It's a Tuesday.
Oh,
it's a Tuesday. Yeah, no. But so we are bumping up Mario Month because of that reason. Because my summer project is the main reason, but I figured March would be the perfect time to bump it up too. And now I actually have a reason to bump it up, which is the summer project. I've always kind of wanted to switch it over to March to coincide with their Mario Day. But so here we are. We finally did it. And we are kicking off Mario Month this year with a classic, with Mario's first foray into handheld gaming, and that is Super Mario Land for the original Game Boy. This is a fantastic game, right? Like,
yeah.
It still holds up overall. There's some issues, and we'll get into the issues. But just some quick facts to run off. It was released in Japan on April 21st, 1989, and then it was released in North America on July 31st, 1989, which is within the same year. And back then, that's kind of a rarity. I think in 1990, we got the first Final Fantasy game in the U.S., and in 87, it was released. Actually, that was like only a couple episodes ago. At the time of this recording, mm-hmm. it was only two episodes ago. But the time you're going to be hearing this, it's obviously much later. Episode back in January I did on the original Final Fantasy. And yeah, so it's weird because that's a 3-year gap between, admittedly though, RPGs take a lot longer to localize than platformers. And additionally, Nintendo was looking to launch the Game Boy around the same time in both the US and Japan, so they wanted to have all their titles ready to go. So yeah, this was going to be a launch game for the game, or it is a launch game for the Game Boy, but it was going to be the pack-in title before Tetris took that mantle. So Casey, what's some of your earliest memories of Super Mario Land?
So this was, I had this game early on. I actually didn't get it from my parents or anything. I got the game way later. I think I got it when I was around 8 because my one cousin had it, and, her and her stepdad would, you know, play it. And then as she was getting rid of all of her old games, she gave this one to me, and I just remember loving it, especially as a kid. And just, I can't believe, like, it's a fairly difficult game.
Mainly, I would argue, because of the controls.
Because of the controls.
Controls are my biggest problem with, but keep going.
Yeah, so that was pretty much my background with it, and I love the music so much that I would rip it from websites before YouTube was a thing, and then I would burn it on CDs and then walk around with my Walkman.
Did you ever troll through MySpace pages to find video game music?
Yes.
Because there would be music pages. Someone would set up an artist page on MySpace, and they would put all of the music up from a specific video game, and they would allow people to download it before Squaresoft or Square Enix actually got wind of it, and they would just, like, basically, you know, cease and desist them, and I can't speak right now, but send them a cease and desist, and they would have to get sent out, or MySpace would just take it down, obviously, which is just wild. It's funny, I actually, when I was getting into the Final Fantasy games, I first played Final 7, 8, and 9. Those were my first Final Fantasies.
Okay.
And 10. I was obsessed with the music of those games. Obsessed.
So good.
And I would spend hours sifting through MySpace pages trying to find different recordings of Final Fantasy music, anything I could get my hands on. I actually might still have some of those downloads. I remember I found this awesome piano version of the Final Fantasy VII world music, the world map music, or sorry, just the world music, not like individual towns or whatnot, but it was so good. That's wild to me, though. That's funny. That brought back a whole facet of my memories that I forgot for a long time that I did. I would just troll through MySpace, which is funny because, like, who does that? And then later on, you could then just search for that. I remember there was a website you used called Dogpile that was good for finding.
Yeah, I used to go on there all the time.
Yeah,
Singing Fish. I know not a lot of people know about Singing Fish.
I remember it. I actually, when Zanga was a thing, there was a Zanga person I followed. I think his name was Sonic Fox or Sonic Mega or something like that. That was his Zanga username, and he wrote a blog and everything. And I actually he basically held like a little contest. If you could find him this song, then and send it to him, then he would advertise your page on his blog for like a month, and he did that for me because I was able to find it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but like I didn't do anything with it. I didn't have anything interesting to say.
I know, but
fucking,
still,
like,
that's so cool.
Seventh grade, sixth grade kid on the internet. Oh man, Zanga was wild.
I loved Zanga.
So anyway, we're not here to talk about those nostalgias. We're here to talk about Super Mario Land. So Super Mario Land, like you said, it is a very tough game, and the music is probably the highlight in my personal opinion. For those who recognize, I actually use the same song for the last episode of Mario Month. I use the same song every time. Granted, it's only been 2 times, but it's going to be again this time. It is a remix done by Yoan Turpin, who is a phenomenal chiptune musician, and like he does a lot of jazz type of stuff. And it is the first level's music that dun da dun da dun 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 dun.
Yep.
It's a really cool kind of jazzy version of it. It's very, very good. And I use that for the end, for the final, for the outro music for the last episode of Mario Month. So you'll hear it at the end of Mario Month, which this year, actually, there's five episodes going to be in Mario Month because there's five Sundays in March this year, which is wild. We have a lot of ground to cover.
We do.
So let's dive into the game now. So some other stuff that I looked into the research, into the development of it. Miyamoto was not included in the development of this game. It was actually only developed, it was developed by Nintendo R&D 1. Miyamoto, I believe, was R&D 4. And the director of this game is Satoru Okada. And the producer is Gunpei Yokoi. And Gunpei Yokoi, I did a whole retrospective on him probably 3-4 years ago now. I did an Industry Legends profile episode on him, and I talked about his major contributions to the video game industry. He created the Game Boy.
Yeah.
Actually,
inventor of the D-pad, too.
He inventor of the D-pad. D-pad. he also created the Game & Watch series. Dude is a legend. He also created, not for Nintendo, but he created the Wonder Swan for Bandai.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm talking
about?
Yeah,
that was for
It was their own handheld. It was their handheld. It was only released in Japan. It had two D-pads on it, but it was not really a D-pad. It was like four directional buttons on both. It was really strange.
Two sets
of four directional buttons, to be clear. It was very strange. But Gunpei Yokoi is a legend, man. Like, he did so much for the video game industry, and it's still a crime to think that he was killed so prematurely. Not like murdered, mind you.
He got hit.
Yeah. It was a car accident. Yeah. He got hit by a car. Actually, I think trying to help someone else too, right? Or maybe
the story was he got in a fender bender and then he came out to inspect it. And now the car just freaking swiped him, killed him right there.
That's what it was. Yeah. Oh my God. It saddens me to think about. So Miyamoto was not involved in the game design of this, which makes a lot of sense. And I don't mean that in a shitty way, but there's a lot of things that are not part of Mario continuity in this game at all. But it's kind of interesting for that. The same development team also developed Metroid and Kid Icarus, which is kind of cool to think about, that the same team that made those, at least Metroid is a groundbreaking game. Kid Icarus is, you know, well known amongst gamers, but not too well known again amongst everyone else. Like, only people who are into retro games know about Kid Icarus, really. And it wasn't until Kid Icarus Uprising that they really had some other type of current game that was there.
I still have to play that game.
I do too.
Yeah.
The original or Uprising?
Uprising.
I do too. Yeah. I played the original. It's tough. It's super tough.
Yeah, I can't be. I beat, I know we're segueing, but I beat Of Myths and Monsters for Game Boy. That's actually really good.
I've never even heard of
it's
that.
It's really good. Yeah, it's the second one.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's cheap too. I think it might be like $10.
I'll have to check that out then. Mm-hmm. But okay, before we continue on, let's hear from a new friend of the show.
Hey everybody, this is Nerd Bomber here, one of the co-hosts of the Online Warriors podcast. Our weekly podcast started as a way for three friends to keep in touch and discuss their passion for movies, gaming, technology, and entertainment. And since then, we've grown into a fantastic online community. Every Wednesday, we release a new episode discussing the latest nerdy news, and then we go hands-on with our weekly adventures and a fun trivia show. Sound interesting? Check us out on every podcast platform, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts, or hit us up at OnlineWarriorsPodcast.com.
So Mario Land is an interesting game for the fact that you don't save Princess Peach, you save Princess Daisy. It takes place in the land of Sarasaland.
And
the whole premise is that there's an alien named Tatanga, and he kidnaps Princess Daisy. Mario has to travel through four different kingdoms and rescue her. The game is broken up into four different worlds, hence the four different kingdoms, and there's three levels each. And the end of the third level, you fight a different boss. And this game's got a lot of variety to it, I would have to say. What are some of your favorite, what are some of your favorite levels, and what do you have to say about the gameplay of it?
So I really enjoy the gameplay. I think it definitely broke a lot of ground when it came to the Game Boy, especially with its limitations. One of my favorite levels is in the last, when you're riding the plane and shooting. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I really like that. The fireballs in this game are really weird. They bounce all over the place.
It's almost like it's a dodgeball almost.
Yeah, it's really, really different. But in terms of gameplay, as we touched upon earlier, the controls are really stiff. Like, really stiff.
Mario drops like a fucking rock every single time.
Mm-hmm.
It is so disorienting when you first play it. If you're used to Mario 3 controls or Mario 1 controls even, Mario 1 controls are a little stiff for me now, but even so, they still, overall, still feel pretty good.
Sure.
But this game, it takes some getting used to. I would argue the difficulty of the game stems from is 60-40. 40% the controls, 60% everything else. And normally, controls should not have any part of the difficulty of the game.
Oh, and going back to the fireball, I think it was cool, too, how whenever you shoot a fireball, you can actually collect coins if it touches it.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool.
And they actually designed that into the game. There's a couple segments where it is too small for Mario, regardless of whether it's big or small Mario, to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no, I think small Mario can fit into them. But you almost, especially in, like, I think level 1-1, I think there's a, right before the end of the level.
Yeah, when you go up the stairs. Yeah.
The way that each level ends, too, there's two different exits you can choose from. You have the bottom, you have an exit on the bottom of the screen and an exit on the top. And the exit on the top of the screen is generally more difficult to get to. It usually involves some tricky platforming, and those, the difficulty to get to that second exit progressively gets harder and harder as the game goes along. And the four lands that you go to, the four different worlds that you go to, are Birabuto, Muda, Easton, and Chai. And then, you know, he rescues Daisy at the end of that, and Daisy thanks him for saving her, and they walk together to ride on the sky prop, which is a prop plane, I believe.
Yes, I think that's the one where you're in it and shooting at.
I mean, in the the game's weird because, like we said, they have some varied gameplay, and I believe it's the second boss, so it's world 2, level 3.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that second boss is a boss where you have to beat in an airplane. You are going through and you have to destroy blocks and shoot enemies that are oncoming. And then you have to fight that boss and dodge the boss's projectiles and stuff like that. It was a really weird thing because it doesn't really teach you any types of gameplay mechanics for that up until that level.
Mm-hmm.
And the level's pretty straightforward. It's pretty easy. But I can imagine a little kid being like, what is this? Like, where, this isn't Mario. And that's why this game is so strange, is because a lot of the enemies don't actually behave a lot like the enemies that you would see in Mario games previously. The Koopa Troopas, when you jump on them, they actually blow.
Yeah, they explode.
Blow up. They blow you, yeah.
They blow you.
Blow me away. It's a Breaking Benjamin song. I don't know what's up with my head. I just keep thinking of, like, music references.
It's the weather.
Oh, my God. It's so gross out today, too. So, the game is just... I think it's super important because it allowed Mario to be weird. And it's a weird-ass Mario game compared to everything else. I mean, Mario is a strange concept if you really think about it. You know, an Italian plumber fights a bunch of mushrooms in a mushroom kingdom. And it turns, if you read the manual for the first game, all the blocks you break are actually the inhabitants of the Mushroom Kingdom that got turned into all these items. So you're just killing a whole shitload of people. What's some of your favorite levels in the game? Do you remember anyone specific or anyone that stand out to you?
I like the Muda Kingdom. I think that's the one where... what are the ones again? What was in the level 3? Is it...
Level 3 is Easton. World 3 is Easton.
Okay, I like Muda and Easton. I know
Muda is the Egyptian one, I believe.
Is that the one where
maybe not.
It's some kind of creature or something that comes up from the water that you jump over and jump on.
I'm blanking on that.
Yeah, it might be too.
The one of the enemies that I remember are the weird zombies in it. They actually are like zombies that you see in more Asian cultures. So zombies in a lot of, I think it's specifically China is where this idea comes from, but I could be wrong. So I apologize if anyone knows this and is just screaming at me like, you're wrong, you asshole. But basically zombies in, I think it's from China, where they are very stiff. They hop. Their arms are out like this, but they don't die. They're kind of like the dry bones from the later Mario games. But their arms are stiff like this, and they just kind of hop.
Yeah,
and the reason they're so stiff
for like 3 seconds and then run.
And the reason they move like that is because since they are dead bodies, rigor mortis has set in, so they can't actually... It's not like zombies now where they're just kind of all like loosey-goosey and gross-looking. It's just... I mean, I'm sure they're gross-looking too, but they're very stiff because rigor mortis has set in, which is kind of an interesting take on it. They don't make it that scary, though, because it feels like how fast could you really jump if they're just hopping at you unless it's like a zombie kangaroo. That'd be fucking terrifying.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Think about that. And then one of the zombie babies comes out of its pouch.
You're on to something.
I know. It's the next Resident Evil idea right there. That'd be crazy.
I liked it too. When you have the Easter Island heads like running to and from. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yes, and you actually have to. Those were annoying to kill, but it was a lot of fun. It was terrifying when they would jump on screen like that because they run fast.
They also had, I don't remember what level it was in or what world, but you had these things that would bounce and you could jump on them to like ride it. It kind of reminded me of like a jelly donut.
No, I know. It reminded me of a boulder, actually. Oh, but
that makes way more sense.
but I won't lie. The graphic for it looks like a jelly donut. Mm-hmm. Now, did you play this on an original Game Boy or a Game Boy that, like a Game Boy Color or something that did not have the normal grayscale?
The original Game Boy when I first had it.
Okay.
Yeah, I never had a color growing up.
So I played this. I beat this for the first time, actually. So we have a game night that we go to every now and then, and I beat this at the last game night.
That's the one you couldn't make.
You son of a bitch.
I know, I suck.
but no, I beat this for the first time just a couple months ago now, and I'm sure some of you have been seeing the games I've been beating on Instagram, for those who follow me on Instagram, @StillLoadingPod, and I also posted on Twitter. I've been beating a lot of these handheld games, so you kind of already have an idea of where this series is going to go. But yeah, so this game, man, is just, it's super memorable for the fact that the music was just, especially that first level music, but just the novelty. It's memorable because of the novelty of having a Mario game in your hands. This was the first one that ever did that. And I'll be honest, while the controls are super stiff and I'm not a huge fan of maybe some of the enemy placements because combined with the controls, it's a little unfair at times, but you can get around it with just a little bit of practice. It's not a hard game. It's not a long game, but I think it's cool because they set out to make a handheld Mario game and damn it, they did it.
Yeah, imagine
it works.
Yeah, imagine, you know, being a kid again and being in an airport or doctor's office or even a car trip during the day. Like I remember playing this on going to the beach, just absolutely loving it.
I mean, what are you talking about? I play games like this while waiting for my car to
get
repaired.
Well, that too. I just meant a Mario game back in the day.
Oh, yeah, my God, yeah. I still do that, though, man. It's a weird thing. I hate having to either take time off work or work a modified shift, but what I'll do is if I have to get my car repaired, and there was one time I had to wait like 3 hours for it to get repaired because it was a long, I forget what it was. There was a reason for it though. They told me it was going to be a long procedure, at least like an hour or something like that. So I brought my DS and I brought a pair of headphones and I would just sit down and I would play. I think I was playing Phoenix Wright at the time.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And I kind of like having that now. Like, yeah. It's almost, I know I'm waiting for this. I have nothing else to do, so it gives me an excuse
to catch up on
a game,
no,
some handheld game. And I kind of love that because it makes me feel like a kid again. So I was playing, especially just a couple weeks ago. I mean, you all will see it. You all saw it on Instagram, but I was playing the Wario Land games, which I guess we didn't really mention it at the top of the episode, but this whole series, since it is on handheld, we're going to be covering Super Mario Land 1, 2, and 3, and Mario Land 3 technically is the first Wario Land. The name is really weird. It's Wario Land, Super Mario Land 3, which is really weird. And then they drop the Super Mario Land moniker and just do Wario Land 2 and Wario Land 3. And then I believe they continue Super Mario Land, though, but it's just repeats of different...
Like they have 3D Land. I don't know.
Well, no. I'm talking like on Game Boy Advance, they had Super Mario Land 4, which was just Super Mario Bros. 3 or something like that. Or is Super Mario Advance 4?
Advance, yeah.
So that's kind of like a weird thing, because is there a Super Mario Advance 1, 2, and 3?
Yeah, 1 is Super Mario Brothers 2, 2 is Super Mario World, 3 is Yoshi's Island, and 4 is Super Mario Brothers 3.
That's confusing. Yeah. Oh my God. That might be an episode for next year's Mario Month.
They do have a Wario Land 4 for the Advance, Game Boy Advance.
That one, ooh. Then that might be kind of interesting. Not to cover all those again, because a lot of it's just repeats of the originals, but maybe we'll do like a Wario Land 4 and then all of those like together in one episode, because we could talk about what the differences are between the original versions and what the Game Boy Advance versions were.
Yeah, no, I think that'd be a really good
right episode. I don't think it's enough to warrant an episode on each of them, especially because we've covered Super Mario Bros. 3 and 2 and 1 and World and all that stuff.
Just make it one consolidated episode.
We have not done Yoshi's Island yet, though.
That's a game I got to play again. I beat that when I was a kid.
I love
that
game.
And it's really good.
I beat the game, for those who listen to not this most recent year in review, but the last year, so I guess 2018's... The year in review for 2018 that I released early in 2019, I talked about all the games I beat throughout 2018, and one of them was Yoshi's Island. And holy shit, that game is so good. Whenever I want to show someone how good old games look on like tube TVs, where they were meant to be, because people look at them now, a lot of them on their HD TVs, and they're all upscaled and just like blurry as shit. It's not good upscaling, and there's input delay and all this other stuff. And you go back and you look at it on a tube TV, I show people Super Mario Land 2, or sorry, Super Mario World, Yoshi's Island. And game looks so good.
The art
still is
just so good.
Oh my God, I could go on for hours about it. But that, I have to hold off on that, because that will be an episode at some point during a Mario month, though I don't know which one just yet. So what are some of your... What do you think of the final boss? Like, what do you think of the whole... It's such a weird... From the final boss, I'm pretty sure, like you said, it's a shoot-em-up, I believe?
Yeah. So you're in a spaceship, and you're just shooting at him. It's very different. I mean, obviously, compared to the other Mario games that were released prior, like even for the Game Boy, it's... Mm-hmm. But, you know, I can't knock them for trying something different, especially after Super Mario Brothers 2, you know, which I love. But
I think when we talked about Super Mario Brothers 2,
the American version,
we mentioned that was another thing that gave Mario license to be weird or be different. I think Mario Land does a similar thing where they really went hog wild with it. It's another weird thing. A lot of the assets from Mario Land went into... Link's Awakening for the Game Boy. You ever play Link's Awakening on the Game Boy?
I did when I was a kid. I don't really remember too much of it.
So there's random moments where you go, instead of the top-down Zelda perspective that you're used to, kind of like basically like the original and like Link to the Past, that's what it is throughout the whole game, but periodically you get a side-scrolling element. Almost like Link's Adventure.
The
Adventure Link, whatever. Zelda 2, The Adventure Link. That's what it is.
My fault.
And it goes into side-scrolling, and it's very strange, and you actually fight Goombas. It's really odd. It's a really weird thing, and I'm pretty sure they just imported some of the assets from Mario Land, though the Goombas look a little bit better than what they do in this game. Actually, one thing we didn't even talk about from Mario Land is the scale of it. And I don't mean just the scale of the world. Like, the game, as you heard, it's only 12 levels long. Anyone could beat this game. It's actually relatively easy if the controls weren't so...
Yeah, you could probably knock it out in an hour.
If you're good. Yeah. I'm not that good. No. I can tell you that right now. I would die a lot, but... The scale is super small. All the enemies on the screen are super tiny. So are, like, the Koopas are super tiny. The bosses stand out a decent amount, but overall, everything is pretty tiny. I think the main reason is because they wanted to show more of the level, and that since the Game Boy only has so much space, like, they're the hardware limitations, essentially. Yeah. And they kind of changed that a little bit in Super Mario Land 2, which we will talk about in the next episode. We'll explain the differences with that. But they change up it a lot in Super Mario Land 2. But in the original Super Mario Land, Mario's super tiny. he is like on the screen. He's there's very little detail on him. And they didn't really need to because it was a non-color game back. You know, the original Game Boy was just grayscale. Well, green scale, I guess. That weird green screen.
The other thing I thought was different, too, is that if you look at the box art, he looks pissed. He looks angry. Like, I even as a kid, I thought that to be strange. He just looks like, you know, get the hell away from me. He's running.
He does.
He just looks angry.
I'm looking at a picture of the box art right now, and they have a lot of the enemies that you see within the game. Like, the final boss is just chilling right there. He looks kind of weird because it looks like a monkey in a spacesuit almost. He's not. He's an alien, but yeah. It's very strange. But you see a lot of the different enemies. You see the Easter Island heads. You see the Sphinx. You see the octopus. You see a lot of weird enemies. I think the enemies are just some of the strangest things in this. Because they have the Goombas and they have the change to the Koopas, like we mentioned, how they explode. But there's like these weird dragonflies that shoot spears down at you.
Yeah.
And just in general, they did a lot of strange stuff with the enemies in this game, both to the classic Mario stuff and to the overall one, or to new ones that they added into it. But yeah, I mean, I don't really have much more to say on it, do you?
No.
I'm actually amazed we were even able to get a half an hour out of this, because it's the first game is very short, it's very simplistic. But don't worry, there's four more episodes in Mario Month, so it's not like you're only getting a short half an hour episode. You're going to be getting a lot more this month than normal. Instead of the normal two episodes, you're getting five, so you're still going to get a lot of content this month, because there'll be another Mario episode. There'll be Super Mario Land 2 will be next week. But overall, this game just, it's super important because it was their testing ground for everything that Mario could be on a handheld game.
Mm-hmm.
And in all honesty, Super Mario Land 2 is leagues better than this game, and I can't wait to talk about it. But
not
this,
to say that this is bad.
No,
yeah.
It's rough around the edges. Exactly. It's very much a diamond in the rough. And an emerald in the rough, not quite a diamond. Just some lesser gemstone than a diamond. But overall, the game is super fun still. Mm-hmm. The music is so good. The controls are bad, but they are functioning. They're functionable. They work. So what are your final thoughts on the game?
It is enjoyable. There are some things that don't hold up, mainly the controls, but love the music, love the gameplay. Definitely one of those games that is a must own if you're a collector.
And it's cheap, too. Yeah. It's super cheap. I still actually want to get the box of it. I only have the cart, but I really want to get it CIB.
Yeah.
Really freaking bad. Because the box art is really cool looking. It's very blue, and it's just got this really cool appeal to it. It is interesting to think that this was not a pack-in title.
Yeah.
I get why, because Tetris has a more universal appeal than Mario does. And Mario, I mean, still has, you know, universal appeal, but puzzle games appeal to those who aren't into video games.
Exactly.
My wife plays puzzle games on her phone. I mean, just think of that. Like, Tetris has been just replaced by cell phone games.
Mm-hmm.
And how many people play cell phone games who don't really play other video games, you know?
Yeah.
So that should do it for this first episode of Mario Month. Casey, thank you for joining me as per usual.
Absolutely, thank you.
Sorry this one's a little bit shorter, but Mario Land 1, there isn't a whole lot to talk about. I'm hoping there'll be more for Mario Land 2. I think there will be. There's a lot more content in Mario Land 2, so that'll be fun to talk about. But overall, go check out this game. I don't always tell people to emulate things, but actually, no, you shouldn't emulate this because you can find this easily on the Nintendo. I'm pretty sure you can find it on the Wii U eShop or the 3DS eShop. I'm pretty sure you can find it just about anywhere.
Yeah, I think it's like
probably
$4 or $5.
Probably.
Yeah.
If you can't emulate it, then. But the cart itself is not that expensive, and Game Boys are not that expensive either because it was a very high-selling console. So, yeah, that should do it for this first episode of Mario Month. Thank you all for listening. And before I go into all my plugs, I wanted to remind everyone that the Still Loading podcast is now a proud partner of the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation's mission is to fundraise and provide video games for children receiving inpatient care at children's hospitals. Check out their webpage at bitbybitfoundation.org. And as for my plugs, if you want to support the show, please give it a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcasting app that you use. You can also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them, or email me, StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show monetarily and help it grow a little bit more, even just $1 a month will help me out a lot. You can go check out the show, patreon.com/stillloadingpod. And that should do it for all my plugs. Other than, oh, check out the Podbeard Network, the network I'm a part of. No Geeks Allowed. They've been on this show a good number of times. KNOW, No Geeks Allowed. And my buddy TJ up at the Hotter Show. And yeah, Casey, do you have anything you want to plug?
I mean, if you guys would like to follow me on Instagram, it's TK_KazuyaKane, KazuyaKane. Basically just show off my collection and anything video game related.
All right. And that should all do it for That should do it for this first episode of Mario Month. Thank you all once again for listening, and we will see you all next time.